Hi, this is Herman from Austria. I'm managing director of Bisurance, a company specialized in embedded insurance solutions. Very interesting issues always on InsurTech Business Series podcast. I can highly recommend to tune in.
Welcome to the InsurTech Business Series podcast. I am Funimi.
And I am Gamola. And together, we host the most exciting podcast on insurance and InsurTech related topics in Africa. Stay tuned. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation, open conversation. So if you have questions, please just drop it in the chat and we'll pick it up from there and ask the guests. So hi, everyone, and welcome again. So let's go straight into it. I'm going to start with Frederick. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and it's been interesting what you've been doing. I mean, some things that we've learned from our conversation with you on our podcast, but also your post online and on YouTube and things like that in the space of digital transformation, right? A lot of the things that we do, I mean, I know that we had a conversation about, digitization and digitalization, how can we get it right? We can say, yes, we are digitizing, but then the process is still somewhat the same. How exactly can we get it right?
That's a fantastic question. And I think that the answer is frighteningly simple, because it all boils down to people. The way that that you should approach any digital transformation or business transformation, they start with the people. And I think especially at the moment in the insurance industry, we have a tendency to fall in love with the insurtech that goes out and say, we're going to disrupt the market and just you wait and see. But we haven't really seen any real disruption yet. And the insurtechs are still depending on the incumbents to move on, apart from a very few. I'm trying to say that we are fast as humans to fall in love with the new and the exciting. And I see a lot of insurers that are jumping ahead of the game and trying to make partnerships or trying to create innovation labs or doing digital transformation. Or at least that's what they're telling that they're doing. And at the end of the day, they don't get the results that they wanted to get. And in my experience, which is around 20 plus years of doing transformation in companies, it's because we forget the human factor. We want to figure out what digital trends we can find. We want to figure out how new smart processes we can actually implement. But at the end of the day, it is still humans who are going to define the processes. And it's humans that we need to change in order to do the new, whether it's digital or business transformation. So I think We should, in order to make our transformations more successful, we should take a step back and realize that we're dealing with people, humans. And unfortunately, we as humans, we are very difficult to get to change our habits, right? I mean, so and basically when you do a transformation, you are changing people's working habits. And I think that the moment that you start to realizing this, then you're also taking the first right step towards a successful transformation of basically any company.
Great. It's interesting that you mentioned people, right? And I'm going to come to Eunice here. Your experience in the industry, I've seen you come through an insurance company and then now running your own insurtech company. I remember there was a function that I was and you were speaking, and you said something that all of this talk about technology and stuff, does it translate to better penetration, which is quite key. If you look at our own continent now, the level of penetration is quite low. And then we are seeing that there are a lot of people who have been underserved, even not just in Africa, even in other parts of the world, right? So what's your own approach to all of these things? I mean, from your experience, working with an insurer and then running your own insurtech now.
Thank you very much. That's a good question. I just like Frederick, I always ask, yes, you're doing technology, you're digitizing, does that translate to penetration? Is the reason for low penetration, especially in Africa, lack of technology? And I would say no. I do not think so. Because if you look at the kind of products that we design, are they people-centric, as Frederick is asking? I think it's time that the insurance sector looked at, you know, human-centered design thinking, whereby we design with the customer and not just building technology for the sake of technology. From my perspective, technology is an enabler, not a solution. It is an enabler of solutions that you have built, that solutions that work for the people. And I'll give, for example, in Kenya, and I don't know whether it's the same in Nigeria. In Kenya, how we live is that if I got a hospital bill, I don't have to worry. I just create a WhatsApp group. I will get my friends into the WhatsApp group, and they will contribute to pay my hospital bill. Now, when you bring insurance to Kenya and say, and you're trying to break that culture, because it's a cultural issue, it's deeply ingrained in us, that even those who have insurance, they still fundraise to for bills. And one of the things that we did at BSmart is to ask, does this rule called the insurable interest really work in Kenya? When you say that I have insurable interest on my husband and my, you know, that is my nuclear family, is that the case for us in Kenya? And I think Africa at large, it is not the case. My brother, who lives in the village, if the child gets sick, they call me and I send money to pay the bill. So actually, when my insurable interest goes to that extent, including my cousin. So when you build insurance and say, it's, I would say it's really copied from Brian Place and Frederick, you know, we copy and come and paste it here and expect that people will buy it. It doesn't work. I believe that what we need to ask is, what are the existing risk mitigating mechanisms that we have, and how can we enable, you know, insurance to work in that environment, not trying to get people from their culture? It won't work. So that's my first part. We're doing everything we can to try and design around that. And I believe someday, Frederick, you'll see some change.
Yeah. Great. I mean, that's what we are looking for. And so I'm going to move to Brian now. So I know your book speaks about from disruption to evolution. I mean, disruption was a buzzword 2020.
Yeah.
Everyone was disrupt. Came from the point of saying from disruption to everyone. I'm guessing that was informed from some of the conversations that you had with the insurance players that you spoke with on your book, right? But what is your take on how the industry could, I know, should go in post-pandemic right now?
Yeah, so the word kind of came about or it came up in the conversations I was having, but it's something I had been living myself on the carrier side. And then when I was at an insurtech, the conversations I had with carriers, and it has this very negative tone to it. And I think in 2020, out of necessity, right, we were all disrupted by the same things. It wasn't legacy versus startup and, you know, sort of adversarial headbutting. We're all being disrupted by the same thing. And so there was a sense that actually maybe disruption isn't a bad thing because it can move the whole industry forward. So, and that's why I try to move to this word of evolution. It's not about, look, the rug is being taken out from under us. This is about opportunity, and disruption can actually be a good thing that you choose to engage in. And I think that's how not everyone in the industry, but the overwhelming majority, I think, has started to shift that perspective and see this as a choice and an opportunity to actually disrupt yourself because you had to. So you think about all of those insurers who were 100% in person. Like if you look at life insurance and financial planning, that's an in-person game by and large. And there's some policies that are sold, you know, direct and or through a call center or online. They don't have to be in person, but a lot of that is in person. And to Frederick's point about, you know, it's people, right? That's, you're talking about being there for someone at the worst moment of their life. These are very interpersonal, you know, human kind of things going on. You didn't have a choice but to disrupt that, or you don't exist. And I talked to some carriers who were like, well, you know, we're going to wait till this is over and then we'll get back to selling. It's like, so you have zero new business for all of 2020 or most of 2020 and a good chunk of 2021. Tell your shareholders that, or your, you know, if you're a mutual, tell your policyholders that, why they're not getting a big rebate when, you know, all the other mutuals are giving money back. It just, that's not strategy and that's not survival. And I think because of this shared disruptive force we all faced, it changed a bit of the tone. And I've been feeling that with the startups I work with or the ones I talk to in my new book, where partnership comes up a lot more. And it's not us against them, you know, only the startups or only the incumbents can win. It's more, well, how do we work together? Because that's actually the path. No one has everything they need for pure success forever, right? We do actually need our peers. We need other markets. We need other ideas to take from and to grow from. So it's a nice shift in mindset that unfortunately was caused by, you know, a terrible thing globally that we're still dealing with. But I think it's perhaps that wake up that the industry needed. And I welcome the shift and hopefully it continues on. I don't think it's a once and done kind of thing. Certainly not if you want to thrive.
I think our host, he left, but Brian, I have a question I'm dying to ask you, if you don't mind. Because I, or anybody, I'm just so curious to hear, you know, how you see the difference between digitization and digitalization, right? Where digitization is just putting power to your existing processes, and the other is where you're actually, you know, changing the processes for something new. What did you see? What the people that you spoke with and from your book, what were they just putting power to whatever they were doing, or did they actually, you know, take a step back and rethink everything?
Yeah. I think that's a great differentiating point. And, you know, I'm sure all of us have seen aspects of this where it's like, well, now we don't issue paper bills. Well, okay, that's fine. Yes, you're more digital. Or, you know, our people can work remotely. That's fantastic. That's digital. Or, you know, you can do everything through the mobile, or, you know, you take a picture of the damage and it gets adjusted. Like those are all useful, valuable forms of digitization. And we need that. But to think more broadly, how does that all piece together? Someone gave me this really great analogy. It's like asking a 2 or 3 year old to get dressed for the day. They pick out each and every individual favorite piece of clothing and their favorite shirt and pants and whatever. And each piece looks great, but it's not an outfit, right? It's a combination of kind of wildly unrelated things. That I think that's where you end up if you just look at it as digitizing. You're enabling a digital version of what you're already doing, which isn't working, right? It's too slow. It's too cumbersome. It's not what customers wanted. It's not meeting, to Eunice's point, the culture in which you're trying to inject your product is not designed the way that your product thinks it is. And so it's never going to fit. It's going to be this mismatch of great looking articles of clothing that don't fit. So of course your penetration is going to stay low. You need to think strategically and holistically about what's the context in the bigger picture. Forget about how we've always done it. Now look at what we need to do. Do we need to call in, you know, what's happening on the fundraising side? And is insurance really about enabling that? Or is it just trying to force feed your way into replacing that when that's not how people are wired in that context? Or, you know, we still have 93 steps in the process, but each one of them happens on a mobile or without paper. That's great, but not really, when you could do it in 4 or 5 steps. And if you're willing to look at that, I think you can open up great possibility.
But that's actually, thank you. That's actually one of the things that I really took away from your book, Rob. And I was thinking about it when I heard Eunice talk, because I mean, it's again, one of the things that really resonated with me was you're having these points that people don't really want to buy insurance, right? And that's what I heard from Eunice as well.
Hi, my name is Joel Masharia. I'm the co-founder of Motisure, where we provide last mile distribution of microinsurance products. Keep listening to the InsurTech Business Series to get the latest on insurance and InsurTech within and outside of Africa.
Yeah, I think I always tell people that insurance is not the same product as something that you when you think about going shopping, right? You think about that experience and you get excited about the going shopping, the types of things that you buy. Insurance is never one of those things, right? It's usually something you're told along the way, right? Like I want to get a new automobile, or I want to have a place to live, or I want to start a new business. Well, part of the steps along the way, you need to purchase insurance coverage. And so it's almost a necessary step as part of a broader process to get something done that you want to do. And when insurance isn't required, in many cases, and to Eunice's point, like we don't think about it, or we may come up with other solutions. And if that's, using a credit card, getting a loan, having everybody from the family chip in, however we do them across countries and across this cultures, we don't immediately leap to mind of, I wish I had an insurance product. And I think that really, I love what Eunice said about design thinking. And I think we're going through this massive change in the insurance industry of going from being product centric. We kind of look at the customer needs and we say, well, how does that map to the existing products that I already have? And we're truly being customer centric, whether it's the customer first. So a lot of top companies are doing this, right? The Amazon, Netflix, some of these big global companies that we heard about, right? They're setting the expectation that consumers have much, much higher than they've ever done before. Mm-hmm. And so it's forcing us as an insurance industry to adapt. And I think that's where insurtechs have the right mindset, because they're starting, they see a problem, right, that exists in society, and they're not constrained by outmoded ways of thinking. That doesn't mean that they can't benefit from a partnership with an existing organization. So I think, to your point, Frederick, some have gone alone, but that disruption hasn't happened. It's been more, to Brian's point, kind of an evolution. But I think the biggest change is that going from product centric to being customer centric.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Rob. I'm going to stay with you. And so I have a question here from Raymond Momanyi. So he's asking, so how do we focus InsurTech on growing insurance uptake and disruption, mostly in Africa? So how has the COVID-19 pandemic really affected this?
Yeah, I want to... again, just really emphasize Eunice's point. I think in the past, you may have a product that's worked in, European market or the Americas, and then you say, okay, we see that we don't have the same level of market penetration for this product in Africa. Let's go bring that product over to Kenya or to Nigeria or otherwise. And, that probably isn't the right product, right? That product is for a different country with different needs, different rules, different market, different culture, different society. And I'm starting to see insurtechs, both startups and existing firms that are looking to launch new products and new offerings. They kind of start in a particular country with a particular market segment, and they really understand that very, very deeply and very, very well, as Eunice has illustrated. And then they iterate. Usually what I find is that entrepreneurs, there's never been an entrepreneur that I met that when they describe what problem they're trying to solve, that I ever said, that's not really a problem. That doesn't exist. I don't think that's a big deal. Like, people have already solved that. I almost never think that. But what is definitely true is whatever solution you come up with to solve that problem, you usually don't get it right the first time. So whatever initial thought that you had, you know, there's usually going to be more to it, and you're going to have to experiment. You're going to have to try multiple things. And so you won't get it right off the beginning. And so I think that's really, you know, we think about disruption like a big bang, like somebody had this brilliant idea and they executed on that and the whole world was changed. And, you know, that's really not the way things work. You'll hear about, you know, how many times they tried to invent the light bulb before they found a formula that worked.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's really, I think about, you know, that overnight success is actually a lot of experimentation and a lot of, you know, hard work in collaboration, formally or informally, to arrive at the best solution.
It's interesting that you mentioned collaboration and partnership. So I know that, I mean, Frederick, I mean, in your capacity and doing a lot of innovation and digitalization with your company, definitely, you know, this whole idea about collaboration or partnership is not going to be strange, right? You know, because you cannot change things overnight. You have to collaborate even in-house and outside, right? For the industry as a whole, right, how important is it for us to embrace the whole idea around collaborations and partnerships, right? It seems like that whole idea is not, we don't like it. We like to have our own thing, have our own data, have our own customers, you know, and things like that. Let's just be where we are, you know, and maybe that's why we are where we are today. But I mean, what's your take on, you know, collaborations and partnerships?
I think you know the answer, but I think before we go there, let me just say that we as in the industry tend to focus on the 10-15% of the incumbents and the insurtechs that makes the most noise and or have the most money or the biggest companies, right? And I think these specific companies, they may have the power to do things themselves and push it through, which we see especially in the Far East, right? But for the rest of us, I don't think we should even consider doing anything ourselves, because we have legacy systems, we have silos, we have bureaucracy, we have so many things that stops, I would say, 80% of all incumbent insurers. So I truly believe the only way you can ever progress an insurance company, which I truly believe you have to, is to find to spend your internal energy in enabling you to connect with insurtechs, with partners. So you can find especially these specific insurtechs that matches your core competences and your strategy and work with them. And through that, I wouldn't even say disrupt, but at least move your company ahead. I don't think if you look at the normal 80% of the insurance industry, I don't think they have the capabilities or the risk willingness in the owners or the board of directors to do the things that are required, which is why I believe truly the only way you can do it is finding the right insurtechs to partner with, so you can do it together. And that just requires that you spend your internal energy in opening up your systems and removing some of the bureaucracy, so it's actually possible to do so. Thanks.
Hello, this is Pat Callahan, the insurance elephant, calling from near Buffalo, New York, about 5,300 miles from Lagos. I enjoy listening to the InsurTech Business Series Without it a Molo Loco, because it proves that even though we are thousands of miles different, the insurance business is not that much different. The concepts and topics that are covered on the InsurTech Business Series, they could be handled the same way right here in Western New York State. So listen in. It's a great podcast, great global and local guests, and it just proves it's a small world for insurance.
So yeah, great point there. So Brian, so your book has you speaking with a number of incumbents, right? And I know that there's another one coming which you are speaking with InsurTechs, right? So, but with the first one now, around you know, collaboration and partnerships, or maybe probably if they have done it better or they have made it sooner, or maybe it was something that they were considering or actually working on at the moment.
Yeah, so I think there's a shift happening around partnerships and openness to it. It's in pockets, but it has definitely picked up steam. And again, I think last year made that more accepted, because the speed, you couldn't now wait 2 years to build something. You had to get it off the shelf. And this enabled by two things, the cloud and APIs. So the fact that you could get some new solution and deploy it rapidly because it's, spinning up another instance on Amazon Web Services or whatever, and deploy it really, really quickly to a dispersed workforce. That's really powerful. And with APIs, you can then connect it back to your core systems. Yes, there's effort, but it might be, 4 to 8 weeks, not 4 to 8 months or years, like a typical integration. That word integration is so scary. So the notion of partnering, I think, has changed for a lot of folks. You have some other factors, putting the pandemic aside, that are driving that even further. And one is on the data side. Yes, carriers love to have their data. It's their secret sauce. It's what drives their underwriting. It's very important. But there's certain kinds of data that no one company, no matter how big they are, will ever have as much insight into as if you can look across. So for example, one of the companies I talked about did work with an AI and ML based, artificial intelligence, machine learning based fraud solution. One of their decisions to go outside for that solution was they recognized they're quite sizable, but even at their scale, they're still not going to catch all of the, you're talking about fraud, all of the like fraud rings and scams that are going on. Because let's say there's a doctor's office who's inappropriately billing for medical services. They're very smart. They have turned their fraud into a business. This is not every doctor and not every fraudulent doctor out there, but there are offices that it's a factory. They've productized their ability to commit fraud. And so they're monitoring, these five claims are with this one insurer. We can't commit fraud on all of them because they might catch it. Or we need to make sure the adjuster is different. We don't have two with the same adjuster in this many months or weeks. So that carrier is never going to catch that behavior or see it across the 30 or 40 other insurers that are also victims of this fraud. But if you're an industry-wide solution used by a few of those carriers, you catch it. And so each of those carriers benefits. So you start to see things like that where, there's value in not building it yourself, aside from the fact that, the tool will be kept up to date and you'll benefit from the other accounts that they have and what those accounts push them to do and all that. And I think CIOs especially have woken up to that and they're much more accepting with it. But, we still have a ways to go, but there's definitely a shift going on right now.
So Eunice, so I have a comment here. This is Dwayne, and he was saying that he was speaking about being an agent. So he was referring to Brian's comments, and he says, we are there for the customers on their worst days. So as a prior agent, underwriter, adjuster, I remind myself of that almost daily as I make and influence portfolio level decisions, and recommendations, right? So you were an agent, right? And I was an agent, and I'm very passionate about that. I mean, starting off in that space, it wasn't easy, trust me. And all of those details definitely in your book. But from that experience, how has that experience, shaped how you run BSmart Insurance today? I mean, you're just growing, right? But how has that shaping what you're doing at the moment, products or engagement with the customers?
Thank you. Good question. How my experience as an agent is helping me run BSmart, or the transition me to be an entrepreneur. Number one, I was an agent not by training, not by plan, just by curiosity. So I started as a customer. And one of the things I wondered is why my colleagues where I was working were running away from agents Yet they have already confirmed the meeting, but when the agent comes, they look for a reason not to show up for the appointment. And so, of course, it came at a time when I was also tired of my job. And so I thought, let me find out why do customers run away from agents? Because it's either the agent has a problem or the product has a problem. So for me to join insurance, I wasn't joining to be an agent for a lifetime. It was more of a discovery. And I discovered quite a number of things. We try to create problems, you know, because you see, like what Brian is saying, that you try to look at the product you have, create a problem around the customer so that the customer sees it's a real problem. And sell the product. I was selling life insurance. It is very difficult to sell life insurance, especially in Africa. And so I started learning and asking why my best question ever, and I keep asking the same question, why? The why is what leads me to whatever I do. So the same why led me to leave, to stop being an agent. And now I wanted to understand, I realized customers do not trust, I would not blame the agent, but of course, there's also the delivery of the product that is a problem, how it is presented. It's a push. You know, when you push something, people repel. You know, when you try to sell and sell and sell, people will run, you know, away from you because nobody wants to be sold anything. So that is one issue. Then I asked, what else? And so that is how I got a job as in business development. And I sat in the product development committee in the company that I was working in. And my question was, why and why not? Because you go to the customer and you actually can see the need of the customer. You come with this need to the office and share in the product committee where we have the underwriters, the actuaries, and everybody in that team. And they say, no, we don't do it this way. Policy does not allow. And then my question is, then why are we here? If it's about policy, and I remember one time asking my colleague, who wrote the policy? And they did not know who did it. And so why are you just following something you do not even know the writer? Why don't you rewrite your own? And so that led me to actually leave the employment because I have so many questions that I need to answer and mostly experiment them. And the difficulty in working in a big organization, as Frederick said, is the structures, you know, the bureaucracy, the silos. So as much as the organization want to innovate, they cannot because innovation requires experimenting. And experiments are quick, you know, and fast. So you experiment and fail and experiment again, fail again, and until you find what works. So when I realize I want to experiment, but I'm also restrained by policies. So I left to start BSmart so that I can experiment. And so we actually started the easy way, which was a comparison platform, because I found out that had already worked in different places, UK, India. And so we started the easy way so that we have some revenue as we experiment. And one thing that I've learned is that it's not about the comparison. Yes, the transparency works for only the existing customers. That means we are solving a problem for just the less than 3% that are already covered. And that's a very murky and bloody section to operate at because everybody, every insurer, every broker, they play in that red ocean. And so that is how we decided we asked, what do Kenyans want? What do Africans, how do they live? How about what if it's not even insurance that they need? It could be something else. So we're in that journey of discovering what exactly can work And recently we launched a product for crowdfunding. You see, because that is, we are always fundraising. And so we ask, why don't you fundraise today and then share a common, have this pool of benefits that you can access. And there's no limitation. You don't have to be blood related. You can just come with your friends, with your extended family, crowdfund, and, you know, share the benefits. And I will not say that we have arrived, because we're still trying to see whether it works. So far, we've been able to insure about 500 lives since January. So I think it is working.
So I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned discovery, right? Discovery is one of the most innovative insurance companies in the world, you know, coming out of South Africa. And I mean, I was listening to a podcast about, you know, how it all started, you know, and the way they thought about not selling insurance, but really providing healthier living, right? And that's how, you know, Vitality came about and things like that. Now Vitality is worldwide. And it's super interesting, you know, how you just have to think differently about all of this. There are some points that you mentioned there that I want us to, and I want to hear each and every one of us is opinion about this. Talking about the underserved, you know, talking about closing the protection gap that exists not just in Africa but around the world. This has come to bear, you know, following the pandemic. You know, there are a lot of people who don't have the protection that they need. Right. So my question now is, because there's a lot of talk about, yes, tech, you know, insurtech, this, that, and people on this call have written books about all of those things. Now, the question now is, can insurtech help? Really? Can insurtech help? We've talked about collaboration. We've talked about, you know, the will to do that. From some of the engagements that you have been having in the industry, can insurtech really help in you know, achieving more people getting protection, getting the cover that they need? I'll start with Brian.
Yeah, so I think there's lots of individual insurtechs that can help with individual problems and needs, and that's great. But I think it's more fundamental than that. What you tend to see in almost every one of these companies is there's a different mindset to how they engage. And it goes back really early on to the point that was made. And now I'm forgetting who made it, but design thinking and customer centricity to the mindset. It's either Frederick or Eunice, or maybe both of you, but we'll just give everyone else credit. So that's fine. I know, Rob, I know it wasn't you and I know it wasn't me. So someone smarter than us said it. That's what's at the heart. And you see them over and over again where they take an engineering mindset to this. And I always say the difference with an engineer and really almost any other profession out there is engineers will always solve every problem. You give them a problem, whether it's impossible or not, they will look at it and say, okay, you know, we're going to try this, or that didn't work, we're going to do this other thing. The only impossibility to them might be around the time of it. So you give them some gap, some hole that needs filling, and they will find a way to fill it. And that mindset is present in almost every insurtech, whether it's a startup carrier or MGA or a service provider or enabler, or whatever. They're there to solve problems. And that's what we're talking about. Get in the mindset of those living with the need or the hole or the problem, and engineers will solve for it. So you add in insurance talent to that. That's what moves us forward. And I think that's brilliant. It tends to be design thinking, customer centric. That I think is the real enabler that comes with insurtech. And that's also why it doesn't have to be a startup. Anyone can do that if they're willing to.
Yeah. Great. Frederick, you want to jump on this quickly?
I think Brian, he said, you actually said what I wanted to say in one sentence, right? Because individually, there are great things out there, but it's more fundamental that needs to change. But also bearing in mind or adding a grain of realism from the insurance world, right? I think it has to be a parallel process, because right now there is I'm going back to my 80% of the insurers, right? There is so many insurers that are so behind what we are seeing and talking about. And I think it, for them, it would be very beneficial of using the individual insurtechs that are quote unquote easier to partner with, just to start doing something. And then on a parallel track, maybe even building on the small successes that they get from partnering with the individual insurtechs, building on this and say, okay, now we know how to work work with the new world, the insurtechs. Now we are starting, you know, redesigning our core offerings as well. Yeah. I think we have to look at both, and it has to be a parallel process, because you're saying it with the engineers, right? If you're taking an incumbent insurer and asking them to redesign everything that they're doing, I mean, that we're going to see two or three pandemics before they're ready, right? So that's why it's for me, I think the realistic solution is actually doing both things in parallel, right?
Thank you. All right. So, Rob, can take a stab at this, and maybe you can speak from the point of view of how can we attract younger generation? Because another challenge is the fact that you have a growing industry where there are older people in the space, right? And they don't seem to want to leave. Sorry. How can we, insurtechs are coming in. It means younger people are coming in. Is that a way? Is that what you talk about it?
Yeah, what we learn about young people all across the world is that they're really passionate about social causes. There's never been greater awareness globally of the challenges that people have in their lives, and that has a really, really broad scope. Everybody that I've talked to over the past year during the COVID-19 pandemic, it's actually remarkable about how similar our lives have been. We've all stayed, very close to our home. Many of us have been wearing masks. Many of us have been very cautious, and it didn't seem to matter who I was talking to, where they were in the world. Their life experience day to day was actually quite similar. And the amazing part is that technology has allowed us this view into each other's lives. The fact that we were able to connect today on this broadcast is just amazingly powerful. I know we take it for granted. It's become common, but it I think we should step back and say that it's pretty remarkable. And because we have this greater awareness, particularly young people, of some of the challenges out there, I think that insurance, because it is financial services that provides assistance at people's greatest time of need. And whether that is, insuring their greatest, asset, whether that be a bike or or a car or a flat or whatever, whether that be somebody's life, somebody's health that they're going through poor health. It's not just a bank account or a stock or a bond or a loan. Like the money comes at the point where you need it the most. And so there's a social element to insurance that I think is really remarkable. And then the fact that you can rethink it from a blank page, it doesn't have to be done the way that it's always done it. And that's really why I titled my book, The End of Insurance as We Know It. Risk is not going away. Yeah. The need for insurance as a concept is not going away yet. There's so many new ways to implement it with the democratization of technology. Almost everybody has access, Brian mentioned cloud computing, to technology that used to only be accessible to the largest organizations. And so it provides people with the tools and resources to unlock their creativity to work on this challenge.
Just want to say thank you to each and every one of you for sharing as much as you did. I really enjoyed this session. It was really interesting conversation. I mean, technology happened. I locked up with it when I came back in. Yeah, so we won.
Welcome to the InsurTech Business Series podcast. I am Funmi.
And I am Gamola. And together, we host the most exciting podcast on insurance and insurtech related topics in Africa. Stay tuned.